Sarah J. Maas's A Court of Thorns and Roses took the literary world by storm when it debuted in 2015, quickly becoming a cultural phenomenon that transcended the young adult fantasy genre. This Beauty and the Beast retelling with fairy lore has sold over 12 million copies worldwide and maintains a devoted fan base that includes celebrities like Taylor Swift and Emma Watson. The series' popularity exploded on BookTok, where videos tagged #ACOTAR have garnered billions of views. What began as a standalone novel evolved into a best-selling series that's currently being adapted for Hulu by Ronald D. Moore, the visionary behind Outlander. But what makes this particular fairy tale retelling so captivating? Perhaps it's the perfect blend of romance, danger, and a heroine who defies expectations at every turn. Fair Archeron's journey begins in desperate circumstances. At 19, she's the sole provider for her impoverished family, hunting in dangerous winter woods to keep them from starvation. Her days are spent tracking deer through frost-covered forests and setting snares for rabbits, while her nights are consumed by the gnawing fear of returning empty-handed. Once a girl who dreamed in colors and shapes, who would spend hours sketching with charcoal on any surface she could find, she's now consumed by survival, her artistic aspirations long buried beneath the weight of responsibility. The calluses on her hands now come from bowstrings rather than paintbrushes. The pivotal moment arrives during a harsh winter hunt when she kills a massive wolf with an ash arrow. The shot is perfect, clean, and merciful, but it carries consequences far beyond anything she could have imagined. The wolf's eyes, too intelligent for a mere animal, haunt her even before she learns the terrible truth. Her target was Andris, a high-ranking fairy from the magical realm of Prithian who had crossed the wall in wolf form. This single arrow violates an ancient treaty between humans and fairies, one written in blood centuries ago. The consequences arrive swiftly, in the form of a terrifying beast-like creature who bursts into Fair's humble cottage demanding retribution. This is Tamlin, High Lord of the Spring Court, though Fair doesn't yet know his true identity behind the jeweled mask he wears. His presence fills the small space with barely contained power and rage, yet he offers her a choice that defies her expectations: immediate death or eternal captivity in Prithian. With her family cowering behind her, Fair chooses life, though she secretly begins plotting her escape from the moment she agrees. What makes this opening so compelling is how it subverts the traditional fairy tale structure while acknowledging its roots. Fair isn't kidnapped, she makes a conscious choice to go, sacrificing herself for her family's safety just as her mother made her promise on her deathbed. Unlike Beauty in the classic tale, she's no innocent maiden, but a hardened survivor with blood on her hands and steel in her spine. Her initial hatred of fairies stems from generations of human fear and the story she was raised on, tales of immortal beings who once enslaved humans and still view them as lesser creatures. She's heard countless stories of humans taken beyond the wall, never to return, or returning changed and hollow-eyed. This deeply ingrained prejudice, born of historical trauma and personal fear, forms the foundation for her character development throughout the story, making her eventual transformation all the more powerful. The contrast between her mundane human world and the magical realm she's about to enter is stark, from the poverty of her family's cottage to the looming promise of Prithian's courts, from her role as hunter to that of captive. Yet even in these early moments, seeds of her greater destiny are planted in the courage and sacrifice she shows, traits that will prove crucial in the trials to come. Tamlin's estate defies Farrah's expectations of a monster's lair. Instead of the dark dungeon she imagined, she finds herself in a magnificent manor where eternal spring reigns, its marble halls adorned with fresh blooms and climbing vines. Her chambers rival those of legendary queens, silk sheets, carved furniture, and balconies overlooking gardens that seem to whisper ancient secrets. Her captor, when not in his terrifying beast form, appears as a masked fairy lord whose beauty and power leave her breathless. The golden mask he wears, curved with intricate designs of rays and swirls, becomes both alluring and unsettling in its permanence. His companion Lucien, the red-haired emissary with a metallic fox mask and mechanical eye that whirs and clicks, initially regards Farah with open hostility, demanding her death for killing their friend. The Spring Court holds countless mysteries that deepen with each passing day. The masks worn by Tamlin and his courtiers seem magically fused to their faces, unmovable and eternal. The vast halls echo with emptiness where a vibrant court once dwelt, servants and nobles now conspicuously absent. Questions plague Fair. Why would Tamlin send one of his own to die across the wall? What power holds these immortal beings in such obvious fear? The answers seem to lie just beyond her grasp, like the strange shadows she sometimes glimpses in the perfectly maintained gardens. Fair's artistic soul, long suppressed by poverty and survival, awakens in this beautiful prison. Tamlin provides her with the finest paints, brushes, and canvases, watching with genuine interest as she captures the magical realm around her. Each painting becomes both an expression of her growing fascination with the fairy world and a way to process her conflicted emotions about her captivity. The Spring Court itself becomes a character in this unfolding drama, beautiful but treacherous. Sentient gardens shift their paths at twilight, pools reflect impossible starlight even at noon, and mysterious creatures prowl the borders where spring meets darker territories. Moss masterfully crafts an atmosphere where danger and enchantment intertwine, where every beautiful thing holds a potential threat. The warmth of eternal spring carries an underlying chill, and even the most innocent-seeming magic holds deadly potential. Fair's growing attraction to Tamlin becomes complicated by his every kindness, sending money to her struggling family, defending her from threats, encouraging her artistic pursuits. Yet these gestures serve as constant reminders of his power over her fate. Their interactions pulse with unspoken tension, each conversation a dance between captor and captive, between growing trust and ingrained suspicion. The estate becomes both sanctuary and cage, its beauty both comfort and torment to a woman who can never be sure if she's guest or prisoner. As Fair spends more time in the Spring Court, she begins to question everything she thought she knew about fairies. The stories of their cruelty and deception don't align with what she experiences. Tamlin reveals that fairies can indeed lie, contrary to human belief, and that iron doesn't harm them, both myths perpetuated to give humans false security. Yet he insists he's never willingly lied to her. This revelation forces Fair to confront the possibility that her entire worldview, shaped by generations of human prejudice, might be built on carefully crafted deceptions. The masks worn by the Spring Court become powerful symbols throughout the narrative. Physically, they're the result of a magical blight that struck during a masquerade 49 years earlier, leaving them permanently affixed. Each mask reflects its wearer's nature. Tamlin's fierce wolf mask, Lucien's fox mask with its mechanical eye, and the various ornate designs worn by other court members. Metaphorically, they represent the personas all characters adopt. Tamlin's controlled ferocity hiding his gentle nature, Lucien's sardonic defense mechanism masking deep emotional wounds, and even Fair's own facade of toughness concealing her vulnerability and fear of inadequacy. The complexity of these masks deepens as Fair discovers layers beneath the surface. During formal gatherings, she notices how the court members use their masks as shields, playing intricate social games while hiding their true intentions. The masks become both protection and prison, allowing their wearers to maintain careful distances while preventing genuine connection. When Fair helps Tamlin tend to a dying fairy, showing compassion despite her prejudice, their relationship fundamentally shifts. "Because I wouldn't want to die alone," she tells him when he questions her kindness. "Because I'd want someone to hold my hand until the end and a while after that." This moment of genuine connection, where both literally and figuratively drop their guards, leads to mutual understanding and the beginning of trust between them. The dying fairy's gratitude and peaceful passing challenge Fair's long-held belief that all fairies are monsters. The theme of hidden truths extends to Fair herself. Her illiteracy, kept secret out of shame, becomes a significant plot point that reveals her deeper insecurities. Having never learned to read properly due to her family's fall from nobility and subsequent poverty, she struggles with written language, a disadvantage that becomes increasingly dangerous in a world where knowledge equals power. When Tamlin discovers this secret, instead of mockery, he offers friendship and assistance, demonstrating unexpected kindness that further challenges her preconceptions about fairies. Their reading lessons become intimate moments of vulnerability, where both characters gradually lower their defenses and reveal their true selves. Through these interactions, the narrative explores how masks, both literal and metaphorical, can both protect and isolate, and how true connection requires the courage to be seen, flaws and all. The celebration of Kalanmai, Fire Night, marks a pivotal turning point in the story, revealing the raw, untamed magic that pulses beneath Prithian's civilized veneer. This ancient fertility ritual, steeped in centuries of tradition, requires Tamlin, as High Lord, to undertake a sacred hunt for a white stag. The hunt itself is symbolic, the stag representing purity and power, and its successful completion leads to the selection of a female participant for the Great Rite, a coupling that channels magic to rejuvenate the land and ensure its prosperity for another year. Despite Tamlin's explicit command for Fair to remain locked in her room, she finds herself inexorably drawn to the celebration. The primal drums echo through the night like heartbeats, their rhythm speaking to something ancient and instinctive within her. The festivities themselves are a riot of sensory experiences, bonfires reaching toward the stars, the scent of ritual incense, and the wild dancing of the fairies who shed their usual restraint on this one night of the year. At the ritual grounds, Fair's human vulnerability becomes starkly apparent when she encounters three predatory fairies. These creatures, emboldened by the night's loosening of boundaries, attempt to drag her into the woods for their own dark purposes. Her rescue comes from an unexpected quarter, a mysterious figure whose beauty is both terrifying and mesmerizing. With violet eyes that seem to hold centuries of secrets and shadows that dance in his wake, Rysand, High Lord of the Night Court, makes his first dramatic entrance. Though his identity remains unknown to Fair, his cryptic warning that all the monsters have been let out of their cages tonight serves as both protection and prophecy. The night reaches its crescendo when Fair returns to the manor and encounters Tamlin, still consumed by the ritual's wild magic. Their confrontation in the hallway crackles with tension and unspoken desire. Tamlin, his usual restraint struck away, pins her against the wall in a display of both dominance and vulnerability. His confession that he searched for her at the rite, that when I didn't find you, it made me pick another, reveals the depth of his attraction and the conflict between his duties as High Lord and his personal desires. The scene masterfully balances on the knife's edge between passion and violence, desire and danger. Fair's ultimate rejection, pushing him away and refusing to be treated like some enraged beast, demonstrates her strength of character while highlighting the complexity of their relationship. The entire sequence serves as a microcosm of the larger themes at play: the tension between civilization and primal nature, the power dynamics between humans and fairies, and the dangerous allure of forbidden desire. This pivotal night also plants the seeds for future developments, particularly in introducing Rysand and establishing the beginnings of a complex emotional triangle that will reverberate throughout the series. The raw, primal nature of Kalanmai serves as a mirror for Fair's own awakening, both to her desires and to the dangerous, beautiful world she now inhabits. As spring deepens in the court, the relationship between Fair and Tamlin unfolds with delicate intensity. Their growing connection reaches its pinnacle during the summer solstice celebration, where ancient magic fills the air with shimmering possibilities. Under a canopy of stars, they dance together, their movements echoing the ethereal beauty of will-o'-the-wisps that float across the moonlit meadow like fragments of starlight. Their first kiss, shared in a moment of quiet vulnerability beneath a flowering archway, marks not just physical attraction, but a deeper understanding between them. Fair finally acknowledges what her heart has known for weeks. She has fallen irrevocably in love with the High Lord. The romance develops through small, meaningful moments. Tamlin teaching Fair to read in the library, their shared meals where conversation flows more freely, and quiet afternoons in the garden where Fair sketches while Tamlin keeps watch. Each interaction reveals new layers to their personalities: his gentleness beneath the fierce exterior, her determination to understand his world despite her mortal limitations. Yet, their blossoming romance unfolds against an increasingly sinister backdrop. Strange creatures begin appearing with alarming frequency on Spring Court lands. The Bog, a creature of shadow and terror, stalks the northern woods, while the shape-shifting Pooka leads travelers astray near the border streams. These appearances, once rare, signal the failing of ancient protective wards that have guarded the realm for centuries. The magic that once flowed freely through Prithian seems to be ebbing, leaving dangerous gaps in the court's defenses. Tamlin eventually reveals the full scope of the crisis. A mysterious blight has plagued Prithian for nearly 50 years, systematically weakening magical barriers and emptying the courts one by one. The once vibrant lands of other High Lords now lie dormant, their power diminishing like colors fading in harsh sunlight. When Fair raises concerns about this magical sickness affecting the human lands or crossing the wall, Tamlin's hesitation speaks volumes before his admission that while the blight moves slowly, its spread seems inevitable. The true nature of the threat crystallizes with Rhysand's return to the Spring Court. As Amarantha's emissary, he brings with him the cold reality of her growing power. Amarantha, once a feared general from Highburn, has proclaimed herself High Queen of Prithian, her influence spreading like poison through the courts. Using his formidable mental abilities, Rhysand forces an excruciating display, compelling Fair to voice her feelings for Tamlin while making both High Lord and emissary bow in a calculated show of dominance. The tension reaches its peak when Rhysand demands Fair's name, leading to her quick-thinking deception of offering Claire Bedor instead, a small act of defiance that may have far-reaching consequences. Through it all, Fair and Tamlin's relationship deepens through shared confidences. She shows him her paintings, raw expressions of her soul that she's never shared with anyone else. He, in turn, reveals the painful truth of his ascension to High Lord, the death of his family, and the burden of leadership thrust upon him unwillingly. Their love grows not from fairy tale magic, but from mutual understanding and respect, each seeing and accepting the other's strengths and vulnerabilities. Yet the looming shadow of Amarantha's threat creates an undercurrent of urgency, suggesting their newfound happiness stands on precarious ground. Just as Fair and Tamlin consummate their relationship in a night of passionate lovemaking, he informs her she must leave Prithian immediately. Though devastated, she complies, returning to the human realm where she finds her family transformed by the wealth Tamlin secretly provided. Despite their improved circumstances, Fair feels hollow, sensing she's made a terrible mistake in leaving. The truth is revealed when Fair learns that Claire Bedor's family home burned down with everyone inside, a direct result of her giving that name to Rhysand. Realizing the danger is imminent, Fair returns to the Spring Court only to find the manor in ruins. Hidden among the destruction, Aelys reveals the full truth. Amarantha cursed Tamlin after he publicly rejected her advances, declaring he would sooner marry a human than touch her. The curse gave him 49 years before Amarantha claimed him permanently, with only one escape: find a human girl who hated fairies enough to kill one unprovoked, then make her fall in love with him despite this act. Most critically, this human must declare her love before the deadline expires. Tamlin sent his men as wolves across the wall as sacrifices, including Andras, whom Fair killed, until the losses became too much to bear. This revelation recontextualizes everything that came before. Tamlin's interest in Fair wasn't initially genuine, but born of desperate necessity. Yet his decision to send her away rather than tell her about the curse, protecting her from Amarantha's wrath even at the cost of his own freedom, proves his love became real. The tragedy lies in their mutual sacrifice, Tamlin giving up his chance at freedom to save Fair, and Fair leaving without declaring her love because she believed a mortal-immortal relationship would only bring him pain as she aged. Determined to save Tamlin, Fair follows a hidden passage to Amarantha's court under the mountain. There, she finds the High Lords of Prithian enslaved and Tamlin seemingly under Amarantha's control. When Fair declares she's come to claim him, Amarantha reveals Claire Bedore was tortured to death in her place. Despite her horror and guilt, Fair agrees to Amarantha's bargain: complete 3 trials or solve a riddle to free Tamlin and his court. Failure means death. The trials test Fair's physical and moral limits. In the first, she must escape a pit with a massive worm using only her wits. In the second, she must select the correct lever based on a written riddle, nearly impossible due to her illiteracy, until Rysand secretly helps through their mental connection. For the final trial, she must stab 3 innocent fairies through the heart with ash daggers. When the 3rd victim is revealed to be Tamlin himself, Fair makes the ultimate choice. Remembering his heart of stone is literal, she declares her love and stabs him, fulfilling both the trial and breaking the curse. But Amarantha, enraged at being outsmarted, uses her magic to brutally torture Fair, breaking her body piece by piece. As she lies dying, Fair recalls the riddle's lines about love being both destructive and brave. With her final breath, she gasps, "Love." The answer to the riddle is love. Though she dies from her injuries, the 7 High Lords each bestow a spark of their power upon her, resurrecting her as High Fae. This section represents the darkest part of the story, where Fair faces not just physical trials, but moral ones. She's forced to kill innocents, make deals with enemies like Rysand, and confront the consequences of her actions. Her transformation into High Fae at the conclusion symbolizes her rebirth, no longer fully human, but carrying her human heart and experiences into her new immortal life. In the aftermath of Amarantha's defeat, Fae struggles with the trauma of her experiences under the mountain and her transformation into High Fae. Though physically changed, she insists her heart remains human, a heart burdened by the innocent lives she took during the trials. When she wishes her heart had changed too, to make living with what she did easier, Rysand offers surprising wisdom. "Be glad of your human heart, Fair. Pity those who don't feel anything at all." Despite the bargain that will require her to spend 1 week each month at the Night Court with Rysand, Fair returns to the Spring Court with Tamlin. As they reach the top of a hill overlooking the rose-covered manor, she sees Alice and her nephews playing safely in the fields. The setting sun gilds everything in golden light as Lucien calls them to dinner. Though a hole remains in her chest from her ordeal, Fair takes Tamlin's hand and says simply, "Let's go home." This conclusion sets up the continuing story while providing a sense of resolution to the immediate conflict. Fair has saved Tamlin and the Spring Court, discovered her own strength and capacity for love, and been transformed into an immortal being with new powers yet to be explored. The bargain with Rysand ensures future complications, while her trauma foreshadows the psychological journey ahead. What makes A Court of Thorns and Roses so compelling is how it transcends its fairy tale origins to become a story about overcoming prejudice, finding strength in vulnerability, and the transformative power of love, not just romantic love, but love as an act of sacrifice and courage. Fair's journey from desperate hunter to savior of Prithian demonstrates that true heroism often comes not from physical strength, but from compassion, determination, and the willingness to risk everything for those we care about.